Right, everyone, we are going to get started. Today is February 26, 2015, and this is the Subcommittee on Public Safety of the Joint Ways and Means Committee. Today we are going to hear House Bill 5015, the district attorneys and their deputies. But before we get started, Rocco has a few announcements.
I have a housekeeping announcement for the subcommittee. The Senate and House Judiciary Committees are going to take a field trip next Tuesday, March 3rd, to the Oregon Youth Authority's McLaren facility. And this subcommittee, the members are invited to go to that if you would like. And if you want to do that, you need to let Ms. Gilbert and Elifo know by Monday morning so that she can get you set up to do that. And apparently the tour or the field trip would start at 4:30 in the afternoon on Tuesday, March 3rd.
Excellent. All right, and with that, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 5015. Mr. Rocco.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 5015 is the budget bill for the district attorneys. Materials for today's meeting have been posted to OLIS. Just to give you a little background before the agency presents, is the DAs and their deputies is a rather unique state agency. The DAs are state employees, but their deputies are not. They have an agency number, but they don't have an office. They don't have a director. They have 36 employees, and those are the 36 district attorneys. They receive administrative support from the Department of Justice, and their budget is almost entirely made up of salaries for the district attorneys and some state government service charges. And in fact, if you look closely at House Bill 5015, you actually appropriate the general fund dollars to the Department of Justice, who then pay the expenses of the district attorneys. Their 2015-17's current service level budget is slightly over $11.6 million all general fund. This is a 7.3% increase over the 13-15 approved level. The increase is primarily due to the roll-up of a couple of salary actions that occurred in the current biennium. First, the district attorneys during the 2014 session received a $5,000 increase to their annual budget salaries effective July 1st, 2014. So that was only 1 year of the budget in current biennium. It has to be accounted for both years in the 15-17 biennium, so that causes an increase in the current service level. And as state employees, the district attorneys receive other salary increases that are provided to management service in the executive branch. So in this current biennial period, they received a cost of living adjustment of 1.5% effective on December 1st, 2013, and then another 2% cost of living adjustment effective September 1st, 2014. And so both of those increases are also having to be rolled up for a full 24-month period in the 15-17 budget. Their agency request budget included three policy option packages. The first was for another $5,000 annual salary increase effective July 1, 2015. They had asked for a $10,000 increase in the 13 session, and as I mentioned, that was actually provided, half of that provided in halfway through that the current biennium. So they're coming back asking for the second half of that original request. The cost of that is about $468,000 general fund. The second package was for $930,000 general fund to partially pay for witness fees as an offset to local government payments for these fees. The last time the state provided funding for witness fees was in the 2001-03 biennium. And then the third package was for $200,000 general fund to provide resources for attorney general legal representation for DAs in any kind of work-related lawsuits that they may encounter. And this is a very volatile number. It fluctuates biennium to biennium, and it's normally taken care of with supplemental appropriations or emergency board actions if it occurs. None of these packages were included in the governor's budget for the district attorneys. In addition, I think the association is here today to ask you to consider an additional request for $8.6 million general fund as a state payment toward deputy district attorney salaries. The last time the state provided payments toward deputy DA salaries was in the 2003-05 biennium. The adopted budget for that biennium included $1.9 million of general fund for deputy DA salaries, and that was later reduced by $800,000 in 2004 due to recession-related rebalance needs. And it has not been, the state has not provided assistance for deputy DA since then. And then finally, I think one thing the Joint Ways and Means Committee co-chairs have expressed interest in hearing more about several times, and I know your subcommittee's been talking about this, is finding out more information about the role the DAs have been playing within the public safety system to ensure that the anticipated avoided costs from the sentencing reforms in House Bill 3194 from 2013 are being achieved, and how they're being achieved, where they're being achieved better than other places. So I'm sure that will come up again. And with that, I think there are representatives here for the DAs to talk to you more about their request and what the DAs do.
Mr. Herman or Mr. Bovet?
I'll begin.
Excellent. Thank you.
Co-Chair Williamson, Co-Chair Shields, members of the committee. My name is Bob Herman. I'm the district attorney in Washington County, and in this year I'm serving as the president of the District Attorneys Association. And I'll begin this morning, start with our mission statement, and I don't want to read through all these slides, but as I was preparing this, I was reminded that when I go out and speak to our police citizen academies, our sheriff's office citizen academies, some leadership groups in the county business leadership groups, trying to explain what we do, I've actually got to the point where I take our mission statement and try to piecemeal, you know, what is the significance of what district attorneys do. Sometimes we go 30 to minutes to an hour with questions. I will not take that time, I guarantee that. But I just wanted to just briefly kind of break out some things that we typically don't think of, publicly in terms of what district attorneys do. So to uphold the United States Constitution and the Constitution and laws of the state of Oregon, it's a good phrase. I often, when I'm partnered up with usually a representative from the public defender's office, I always ask the group, you know, who's the first person that represents someone accused of a crime in the criminal process? And usually the answer is the guy to my left or right, the public defender. And I say, well, actually, in a lot of ways, it's the prosecutor. Because through all the training that the police get, we're the next line of training. We work with them daily. We work with them on issues. The Court of Appeals comes out every Wednesday with new decisions, court decisions. And we react to those changes in search and seizure law, those nuances, because we're kind of the front line. And so the reality is, and we respond throughout the state. We respond. We have someone on call to answer questions of police officers 24/7. In my county, we're bigger, so we respond to child abuse questions, homicide scenes, car crashes, and so forth. But we're there to help with the legal issues so that our assistants may well make sure we're doing the job, and it protects the accused and protects all our citizens. To preserve the safety of public, we do not stand in the line of the police officers that are out there risking our lives daily, I can assure you, with what we do. But I am reminded that and I talk about it to the groups, that our decisions, our charging decisions, our negotiations, and a large percentage of cases in Oregon, probably 95-96%, are negotiated. Our sentencing recommendations, our abilities in the courtroom all translate to the public safety in terms of the decisions we make and the work that we do and making sure that the public is protected by the work that prosecutors do following the cases through the system. To protect the rights of crime victims, I don't need to tell any of you, it's been expanded in Oregon. In our office, our contacts with victims have quadrupled into close to 70,000 contacts, which many are repeated contacts with victims. But it's a critical and important function that prosecutors play in helping people through the process. And it kind of ties in to pursue justice for all citizens. Those things originally may just be kind of the duh, and it's a nice mission statement. But it's important to emphasize to produce justice. Justice doesn't come measured in my view, in the number of convictions, the length of sentences. It comes in how cases are treated and people in the process are treated. And it's for all citizens. And so the thousands of cases that usually surprise people when they learn, in our county about 2,000 cases that we don't charge that come in the door that we review and choose not to proceed on. And so that affects all citizens, those uncharged and those charged and those in the community, with hopefully with skill so that we're doing our job as we should. We're the part of the adversary system. We should be doing our job well, as should the defense, honor and integrity. Our constitutional authority for district attorneys, as Mr. Rocco mentioned, it's kind of an odd deal. In one sense, we are state officers, and yet we're elected by the citizens in our county, and basically, our departments are supervised by the commissioners in our county, and a lot of our budget comes from them. Value statement. This is kind of again what we talked a little bit more, and I won't read through it at all. But I do want to emphasize at the beginning: justice, public safety, public confidence in the system. Obviously, the times now are such that you know, throughout the country, even though we're not in other parts of the country, what happens in other parts of the country certainly affects the public's confidence in the justice system as a whole. And so we remain as there in the community to educate, there in the community to answer questions, and there to deal with public concerns. Because if the public doesn't have confidence in how the system works, then we have a problem. And it may be the system's working fine. If the public doesn't think the system's working fine, then there's a problem. And so a balanced approach to criminal justice, collaboration with our community and public safety partners, those parts of our value statement are probably as evident today as they've been for a long time in terms of working with everyone, including our legislature, to make sure that there's a confidence in what we do and how we do it. This is just a list of additional duties. Kind of a reminder of what the prosecutor's offices are involved in. It varies from county to county based on size and certainly resources and certainly needs. Again, I won't go through them all. Task forces, community involvement, multidisciplinary task forces. I know the legislature has, over the years, has basically directed some of those task forces, which have proved extremely valuable in communities. A child abuse team that involves nonprofit members, schools, healthcare facilities, law enforcement have proved invaluable in our ability to deal with and understand and properly handle child abuse cases. We even have an animal abuse multidisciplinary team in our county, because as a practical matter, if you seize a bunch of rabbits, and this happened a number of years ago, and you don't properly segregate those rabbits, then you have we wish we could do it with money seized, but you have a lot more than you have a lot more seized items at the end than you had at the beginning. But seriously, in a lot of places with livestock, where animals have been abused and so forth, the ability to work together with all the partners requires a way to deal with the problem, and that's kind of unique. And I added a few other things here. In our county, I know across the state from the presentations I've heard, there's a coordination and duties with the mental health the mental health field and those practitioners in the mental health field, both I guess in the advocacy side, but locally, have become critically important with our law enforcement, critically important to deal and attempt to solve some of the issues that we're seeing in our jails, in our communities with treatment. It's a major point of focus. Key performance measures that we have: child support collection services to victim, customer service, early resolution, and specialty courts. I won't dwell a lot about that. I'll get to the next slide, but whoops, I'm going the wrong way. In terms of child support, I believe there are 10 counties, 11 now maybe, that do not handle child support. The other counties do. Quite frankly, we deal with our federal partners and a lot of regulations and a lot of issues, but there's a tremendous amount of money and a very successful collection rate around the state for child support. I would mention the special resolution programs, and that certainly touches on 3194 and what's going on now, what's gone on in the past, but those have been those have become increasingly more important in our working together with other entities to work on ways outside the normal prosecution function to deal with individuals, to divert, to program, to find other alternatives rather than the start to end criminal justice process. And I think we're getting a lot better at it. We're certainly very active in that participation, and we've been able to do it in a way where we maintain public safety. There's not a risk of public safety with the programs we have, and I think we've all been enlightened over time and progressing well in that area.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Gorsuch.
To go back to that last slide for just a moment. So the bottom bullet where it's talking about plea negotiation savings, is that statewide for those statistics, or is that your county?
Chair Williamson, Representative Gorsuch, that is, I believe, statewide.
Okay.
Certainly for the percent of convicted felons that don't go to prison, and that rate varies a little bit. It's been fairly consistent in terms of the negotiation.
All right. Thank you. Thank
you. Welcome. County responsibilities. Oh, did I skip one here? Oh no, county responsibilities. And this varies, you know, with 36 district attorneys, different size of counties. It's really quite interesting to keep in mind what everybody's doing, different things. So some counties, some DAs serve as county council. Thankfully, that's not the case in my county. But deal with county ordinances. Many DA's offices do civil commitment hearings, which is a totally different hat. It's a different realm, but it's a very important area and trying area. As I mentioned, child support enforcement, the medical examiner programs, they vary around the state. From the metro area, we're basically self-supported, if you will, by the wonderful program we have here, but in other places in the state, more remote, the DA is more actively involved. Petitions, juvenile dependency and delinquency hearings, post-conviction hearings, public records inquiries are becoming a larger function in many offices, and what's often it's not just public records requests to the DA's office for records, but it's we serve as a quasi judge in the role where if there's an agency within our county that has denied a request for public records, we then get those cases and rule on them, and it's one of those areas historically that's been the responsibility of district attorneys. They're increasing in number. They're becoming more complicated and more time-consuming. And one of our DAs also serves as the juvenile director. County supplements. This goes to the wage issue. Ten district attorney. How it works is there's a base salary for district attorneys. 10 counties over 100,000 receive a base salary, and then the rest, 26, receive a lesser salary. I think it's $116,000 base salary for the 10 counties, over $100,000, and it's about $99,000 for the district attorney, the other 26. Under the law, counties can provide at their pleasure a supplement to those district attorneys, and certainly that is can be directed by both the county's perception of how the district attorney is doing, as well as certainly resources. There's 10 district attorneys that do not receive a county supplement, and as you know, the five largest counties have varying size and staffs, but large staffs that the district attorney is in charge of. Makes kind of a unique position, as I mentioned, because we're state officers elected by county voters, and we then manage all county employees under the county, typically HR rules, county civil service rules, and in effect counties, county departments and county budgets within the county system. As mentioned, our program priorities deal with compensation, and Mr. Bovette will be talking about these in more detail, so I'll move through them. State government service charges and prosecutorial assistance and publications. Actually, that's what we get now. It's basically salaries. Here's the governor's budget. There it is, our compensation salary, our state government service charges, and then $7,000 and change for the other services and supplies. That is our basic government budget. This slide is there to demonstrate the Justice Service budgets, Public Defense Services Commission, the Judicial Department, and District Attorneys. Let me emphasize, because when that first comes up, I know you all know the system, but if you show it to somebody that doesn't know the system, they say, "Whoa, that doesn't seem very fair to district attorneys." I'd emphasize a couple things. First of all, this isn't in any way suggesting that the Judicial Department or the Public Defense Services Commission are funded more than they should be. That's not the purpose of that at all. And it's also important to note that district attorneys, as you know, receive county budgets, and the county moves us much up the line with county resources, but it's more for the purpose of demonstrating state support to district attorney's offices and the work we do as it compared to the state support for other agencies. And a reduction options that always goes to the very fact that if we're faced with a reduction based on our salary or based upon our budget, it's salaries, good or bad, we don't have the option of taking days off. Constitutionally we're mandated to be working there every day, so it's not like we can just take 2 days off for the salary. So that's what we face with our budget situation, is if there's a reduction in our budget, it comes out of salary, pretty simply. I will now turn to Mr. Bovette.
Co-Chair Shields, Co-Chair Williamson, and members of the committee, my name is Rob Bovette. I'm legal counsel for the Association of Oregon Counties and the former Lincoln County District Attorney. As you may know, I'm sure you all know, we have quite a number of members, counties, that are in severe financial distress. And the number seems to be increasing. What we decided to do at AOC last year was hold a series of public safety summits around the state to find out from stakeholders what counties can and should be doing to try to alleviate the negative impact on public safety around the state of Oregon, particularly in distressed counties. So we held those summits and we came up with recommendations from our stakeholder partners. And the number two recommendation by priority was what I'm going to talk about here in a few minutes. I have this handy-dandy chart here, which I'm sure you all have, and if you don't have one, I'm going to hand you one because we hand them out like candy. We are your partners in delivering services to the citizens of the state of Oregon. And we made this nice little chart to show the stuff that the state pays for exclusively. Those are the green. What we share, shared services, are in red. And blue are things that the counties pay for entirely. And you'll notice the district attorneys are in the second column in the red. So this has traditionally been a shared state-county service where we both share the expenses, as we've been talking about. Historical state support was typically around 19-20% if you go back throughout. And really, the budget consisted pretty consistently of four items. The district attorney's salaries, the base salary, as we've been talking about, a portion of the deputy district attorney's salaries, witness fees, because after all, the district attorneys are prosecuting cases on behalf of the state of Oregon, so the state of Oregon really should be paying for the witness fees, for the witnesses in cases that you're having them prosecute, and the DAS assessment that we've talked about. So back in 1975, I just pulled that number out because it was in one of the reports that Hardy's office back in the day generated. The state covered approximately 19% of the entire costs of district attorney's offices around the state of Oregon. But throughout the 70s, 80s, and 90s, that percentage dropped by over half to 9%. So what the legislature did in 1997, seeing that, and counties were raising alarm bells because this was impacting public safety, is in 1997, the legislature passed Senate Bill 6, which basically told Attorney General Hardy Myers, study this problem and make some recommendations. So in 1999, Hardy Myers produced a nice report, and he released it to the legislature. He documented the harm that was being done to public safety, especially in distressed counties, because the legislature had mostly defaulted on its shared service obligations to district attorneys. The shift of the financial burden to counties to make up for it where they could. And he recommended that the state legislature increase their contribution by $20 million to restore really state support for this shared state-county service. Unfortunately, the legislature did just the opposite in 2003. Not only did they not provide that $20 million, they actually zeroed out two of the four line items, completely eliminating, LFO staff has mentioned, the deputy district attorney line item entirely, as well as the witness fee line item entirely. The governor's task force studied this issue. Their number seven recommendation in 2009 was to restore state support for district attorney's offices. And in the next year, in 2010, the efficiency task force studied all of the governor's task force recommendations and prioritized them. The number three priority of the efficiency task force study in 2010 was to restore state support for district attorneys that was recommended by the governor's task force. So this is the ask that the Association of Oregon Counties and the Oregon District Attorneys has before you. Some have been talked about, at least two of them have been talked about. The ask is $10 million. It's only half of what Attorney General Hardy Meyer recommended, 15 years ago. We think it's a very modest request, and it would put the state back on the playing field for supporting this shared county services. It would provide for the second half of the DA salary increases at $468,000, as Mr. Rocco mentioned. It would provide for $930,000 of witness fee support, as well as $8.6 million for deputy district attorneys. So that is what I have for you. I'm happy to answer any questions, but I certainly would like to start the conversation about getting the state back involved in essentially paying for its fair share of this shared service.
Questions? All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Does anybody need one? You all have one.
Oh, I have one. We haven't passed them around. Doug, you're on the list. Are you coming up?
Sure, thank you.
No.
Okay. Okay, so we have DAS. Thank you, Michelle.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Williamson and Co-Chair Shields and committee members. For the record, I'm Michelle Lisper. I am the analyst for and the chief financial office for the DAs. I do not have a lot in my presentation. Most of it has been covered. What I will add is some of the emerging issues. I will say that the governor's budget does cover, does include for the district attorney's current service levels, level of service. And to point out that they fall into, as far as the 10-year plan for Oregon under public safety, where they do investments or they invest in youth families, mostly through child support enforcement in non-public assistant cases, their participation, as they mentioned, in the specialty and alternative courts, and representing interests of children dependency cases. Additionally, as far as they also fall under the prioritized proven prevention programs, the DAs do support with the justice reinvestment initiatives through safety disposition programs, early disposition programs, and the initial charging stages, plea negotiations prior to trials, and working with local law enforcement partners to advocate for managing nonviolent crimes and offenders in the community. The third point to mention is that they do improve coordination with their local communities and citizens by participating in the statewide crime prevention programs, like local and public safety coordinating councils, as they mentioned, child abuse prevention teams, and community outreach activities at a very high level. Most of this has been covered. This graph shows you their expenditure history going back to 2007. Mr. Rocco and the members from the DA's association already mentioned what their expenditures were, so there isn't too much that I can really add. But if there's any questions that you may have for us.
Questions? All right, no, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
So, is there anyone who hasn't signed up for public testimony that would like to sign up? If not, we'll have Mr. Evans, Mr. Russell. Come on down.
Good afternoon. Co-Chair Williamson, Co-Chair Shields, members of the committee. My name is Richard Evans, and I'm the superintendent of the Oregon State Police. I'm here to support our public safety partners, the district attorneys. I want to give a quick conflict of interest for you. My wife is a deputy district attorney in Marion County, but I want to let you know that as we look at the public safety system around Oregon, we really focused on some of the rural counties and some of the areas that we had some real problems with. No officers in Josephine County, no jail. But I think some of the things that we're failing to pick up is a lot of quality of life crimes are not being prosecuted in large and small counties across Oregon. The fact of the matter is we can put more police officers in Josephine County or Curry County or any of the other counties, but if we're only prosecuting or major person felonies, DUIs, and domestics, there's no incentive for folks not to commit criminal activity. And the DAs and the Oregon State Police, public safety, chiefs, the sheriffs, and all been working together extremely hard. I will tell you that the message that we will continue to tell you over the next few months is that we are working tirelessly together. I consider these folks my second family almost. I see them almost every day, and we work on public safety issues as a group. And I have not seen that in my 28-year career, and we continue to work toward the issues that you folks see, and we're in this together, and that's why I'm here today. The one thing I want to point out to you is that the district attorneys sometimes don't get the proper credit. My wife's phone rings almost every night. Middle of the night, she gets a call from a local police officer asking her, do I have enough probable cause for a search warrant? Can I do this? Can I do that? This goes unnoticed. And I'm telling you, her phone rings more than my phone does. And the service that that provides to the officers keeps them out of trouble, keeps the police departments where they should or shouldn't be, and provides legal advice 24/7 is invaluable. The other place where I see it on my department is the major crimes teams. Oftentimes when we're investigating major crimes, homicides, kidnapping, missing persons, the DAs are hand in hand with us the entire time. They're the ones that are helping us make the right decisions and move forward with the cases. It's not, it doesn't make the news. What makes the news is the Portland Police Bureau arrested X, Y, and Z. It doesn't say that the district attorneys were there for the first 24 or 36 hours of the case and don't go home without sleep. So in just quickly in closing, we're working together. You can add more police officers, you can add more jails, we can work with corrections, but if we fail to look at the district attorneys as one of the legs or tables of the chairs, we're going to have difficulties in meeting our desired outcomes in the public safety system. Thank you.
Afternoon, Co-Chair Williamson, Co-Chair Shields, members of the committee. My name is Scott Russell. I'm Woodburn Police Chief, currently serve as president of the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police. And I'm appearing here before you today on behalf of the association members to support our district attorneys and the good work they do. As police officers, we stand at the gate, really the entrance to the criminal justice system, and we're intimately familiar with the desperate need for adequate prosecutorial resources in our system. Without highly qualified district attorneys and trained and adequately staffed group of deputy DAs and adequate funds to produce witnesses when needed, the system will grind to a halt. After working hard to make an arrest, our officers often and build a solid criminal case, it's very difficult to talk with a victim and try to explain to them why their case is being dismissed or not prosecuted because of lack of resources. Yet, I along with my colleagues do that on all too frequent basis. Victims often ask, as the superintendent said, well, can't we get more police officers? Wouldn't that help? And of course, we're never going to say no to more police officers, especially at local government. But we have to tell them without, no matter how many local officers we may have, without prosecutorial resources to hold offenders accountable, it's not going to do a lot of good. Only adequate resources can give victims and defendants alike the hope to receive equal justice and opportunity to overcome the crime that brought them together initially. Without adequate resources, criminal cases go unresolved and victims feel powerless. With adequate resources, Oregon's criminal justice system has demonstrated its ability to work collaboratively and to seek justice for victims and alternatives to incarceration for defendants, as well as reduced recidivism. If we hope to maintain the reductions and the good reductions we've seen in crime in Oregon and reducing our prison population and also increase our livability, now is the time to invest in our resources that will help keep the criminal justice system function effectively in Oregon. Therefore, the chiefs ask you to favorably consider our friend's request, and I certainly want to thank you for your service to Oregon, and thank you for letting appear before you today.
Thank you. Next up, Sheriff Garrett and Mr. Moss.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Williamson, Co-Chair Shields, committee members. My name is Pat Garrett. I'm the sheriff at Washington County. I'm the current secretary to the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. And I'm here today on behalf of the association to support the district attorney's office state funding request. As has been conveyed to you today, district attorneys are an important part of our criminal justice systems. District attorneys uphold the laws and constitution of our state and country, protect victims' rights, and ensure justice in our communities. They make decisions on the appropriate way to hold individuals accountable for their actions, give voice to our most vulnerable victims of crime, and collaborate on regional and state working groups to tackle contemporary justice system challenges that we all face. State funding for activities described in the DA's Association's testimony are an important part of continuing their good work, whether that's in a hard-hit rural community, an urban center, or any place in between. Detectives, deputy sheriffs, police officers, victims, witnesses, police chiefs and sheriffs, we all depend on the district attorney's offices to have the capacity to support our investigative efforts and, more importantly, the overall public safety system. I ask that you support the DA's Association funding request for the 36 elected district attorneys in Oregon. Much of our entire justice system depends on our support to their good work, and I want to bring up just one other important function they perform for us. It hasn't been talked about today, and that is professional accountability. We depend on the DAs when we have someone who has had an ethical lapse to help us hold each other accountable. And I know from personal experience, you may have seen in the news just under a year ago, we had two staff members in our jail who we came into some information that they may have committed criminal acts in our jail. Had a very thorough outside agency investigate that case, presented that case to our DA's office, and I know from this experience and others before it, they are just as committed, if not more committed, to holding folks accountable who happen to be in public safety. And that's just a really important role that they play for us. It helps ensure that our organizations maintain our professional edge, even if it's a little uncomfortable at first, and helps communicate real strongly that in this business, integrity is non-negotiable. Listen, thank you for affording me the time to testify today, and thank you for your service to the state of Oregon.
Thank you.
Thank you, co-chairs, members of the committee. My name is Fred Boss. I am the Deputy Attorney General. I'm here on behalf of Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum. I wish to testify in support of the district attorney's request for funding. The Oregon Department of Justice has a longstanding relationship of support for our state's attorneys, district attorneys. They are on the front lines of the war against crime, conducting the vast majority of criminal prosecutions in the state. They are locally elected and responsive to the unique attributes of each county. Their caseloads are high, and they handle it with limited resources. Adequately funded district attorney's offices are vitally important to the justice system in Oregon. I ask you I urge you to pass House Bill 5015. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Yes, Representative Krieger.
I'm surprised that the gentleman came and talked to us because he's got more hair than five of us combined. Jealous of the hair.
Yeah, glad we got
Co-chair
that on the record.
Representative Krieger, thank you.
Yeah, I would say he means that in a good way.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Ms. Cozine.
You had haircut.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Shields, Co-Chair Williamson. My name is Nancy Cozine. I'm here as the Executive Director at the Office of Public Defense Services, and we're here to speak in support of Oregon's District Attorneys. The Public Defense Services Commission regularly relies upon the assistance of Oregon's District Attorneys in its mission to provide quality public defense services across the state. As part of our quality assurance efforts, we ask district attorneys to provide feedback on a regular basis and in a variety of ways. We have an annual survey where every year we ask district attorneys to provide us with information, both in terms of rating scores and individual comments related to the work of our lawyers. We ask them to participate in our peer review system, where we actually evaluate individual providers at the local county level. In those peer reviews, we ask them again to respond to electronic surveys, and we interview district attorneys both from the top to the bottom so that we can get a sense of how our lawyers are performing in those counties. We also ask them to participate in what we call service delivery reviews. These reviews review the way that we're delivering services in a county. If we need to switch between a public defender office, a consortium, a law firm, we ask them for their input about how the system is working in their county, and they are always very gracious, not just in answering our questions, but in coming and talking to the commission. As we project caseloads for the coming biennium, we usually ask district attorneys to come talk to the commission about trends and charging practices. We can look at crime rates and we can look at other factors, but it's very helpful to have their frontline knowledge of what's going to be happening in the years as we project our caseloads. Every time we ask them for feedback, they've been very gracious in sharing their time and their resources to help us ensure that we are delivering quality services in a cost-efficient manner. The PDSC has again endorsed in its 13-15 strategic plan, and I'm sure it will again in the future, the importance of a balanced public safety system. The language in the strategic plan indicates that the commission is committed to work toward fair compensation for all publicly funded lawyers practicing in the area of criminal and juvenile law. The Oregon State Bar Economic Survey demonstrates time and again that district attorneys and public defenders have compensation that's far below other lawyers. Our district attorneys remain a committed and dependable group of lawyers and have consistently dedicated their time to the quality of public defense services and improving our local justice systems. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? All right. Anyone else? Mr. Rocco, anything for the good of the order?
No, Madam Chair. I think that concludes it.
Thank you,
Madam Chair. Mr. Rocco, so we gave money for assistant DAs in 2003, so we have not given any other money for assistant DAs. So right now there's nothing in this budget for deputy DAs.
Madam Chair, Representative Wisnett, that is correct. The last biennium that state money was provided for deputy DA salaries was the 2003-05 biennium, and there is nothing in the current for that.
Follow up, Madam. Mm-hmm. So do you know, sir, if there some counties have no DAs or assistant deputy DAs? How many counties we have that have no assistant or deputy DAs? Do you know that?
Madam Chair, Representative Wisnett, I do not know that specifically. I believe there was some additional information provided by Mr. Harkle, wrote in a letter that he submitted that's on OLIS that has some information about the use that they would put to deputy DA salary adjustments and how many the counties have.
I'm sorry, I didn't see that.
We all knew that Doug wanted to talk eventually.
Come on up, Doug.
That's
Co-Chair Williamson, Co-Chair Shields, members of the committee. For the record, my name's Doug Harkle-Rode. I'm the executive director for the Oregon District Attorneys Association. And we have at least three counties. I'm digging quickly. But we have at least three counties that have no deputy DAs at all. They're small counties where they just have an elected district attorney, and that's it. So that's sort of the answer. I can actually dig that out, but there's at least three.
Thank you. Thank you.
Representative Krieger.
If they can arrange it, possibly have Mr. Hackerode and Mr. Herman, if they have time, sometime to come by and visit with me about 496-630.
All right.
We can do that.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Also wanted to note, I believe it was in 2007, we boosted the salaries of those three DAs from Gillum. Can't remember which counties those three counties are exactly, but brought them up to par with some of the other district attorneys around the state.
May I comment?
Absolutely.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, that's correct. you did that. We used to have a four-tier system, and then we went to a three-tier system, and then there were those three small counties, and you moved those to the second tier. So now we have a two-tier system. Which seems much better, in my opinion.
Thank you. Representative Barker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just kind of like to, in hearing them speak, it reminded me, especially Superintendent Evans, all the years that I wouldn't even think twice about calling in the middle of the night to have somebody come out on a case to give us the advice so we could not screw up a case and do the right thing. It was just really important, and it I know I've been talking to my daughter who would get called out in times after she had our grandson, when Granny and Grandpa would have to go over because she was out all night, wanted to come home, take a shower, and had to go back out on a case. And just how much of that's done and just as part of the job that they accept. And as far as holding people accountable, I was what I would consider to be a personal friend of Mike Shrunk's for years. I knew him in Marine Corps circles as well as professional circles. And never did I ever think that if I had committed a crime that he wouldn't prosecute me. I mean, I knew that he would do his job without a doubt. I mean, it was just, and I think all Portland police understood that, and in fact, they did prosecute people. Mm-hmm. And then the one other thing that we didn't really talk about too much, and it may not happen in all the counties, but as far as police training, we had he's retired now. Wayne Pearson was a longtime deputy district attorney. And as you know, we changed the laws down here. And he would come out, he would be training after every session, keeping us up to date on what the current law was. And some things had changed where you could no longer arrest people for certain events. And so we would be kept up to date. And without that valuable training, the police would be making mistakes and people would be getting arrested that shouldn't be arrested, and those kind of things. So they provide an invaluable service with the police departments and sheriff's departments to keep everything moving along as it should. Thank you.
Excellent.
Just one thing. You know, yes. You just talked about accountability and that you had no doubt that you would be prosecuted. I think that's true. But my 28 years, I had no doubt that I was accountable to the superintendent of state police by my conduct as an officer, and it better be with integrity. If it wasn't, look out. And that's the way it ought to be.
Anyone? All right. We're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 5015, and before everyone gets up and runs away, I want to make sure that Rocco puts on the record the request for Phase 2 under 3194 data that the co-chairs want. You have it? Any yes. More? Yeah, okay.
We will make sure that happens, Manager. Yeah.
So Rocco will work with you, probably, Doug, to help get that information pulled together.
Fine.
Great, thank you.
Can I make one more announcement?
Yes.
We're going to be watching in this committee a documentary called Mothering Inside at some point in the future, correct? We've mm-hmm. agreed to that. I also wanted to let the committee know that you will be getting an invitation for viewing by Oregon Film on March 3rd here in Salem at 7 o'clock. It's at some restaurant or local brew pub. It's about a 30-minute documentary that really just shows the importance of the work that we're doing here.
Great, thank you. With that, I will close committee. Thank you.